From the big screen to the small screen of your smart device, visual effects are everywhere. Students in the digital video program at the University of Advancing Technology produce creative content in this innovative field. These students produce award-winning effects films with applications in diverse industries, ranging from video production to news gathering and animation to gaming. Graduates from this program can be found running studios and working on productions like Battlestar Galactica, Game of Thrones, and Avatar, to name a few. Learn more about UAT's digital video degree at uat.edu.
It all begins in 3, 2, 1. It's a grunt. All right, here we go.
I wish I could go back and do it for the first time all over again. Here's the new experiences.
It's a game! It's only a game! This is Film Sack. Oh, sure.
Hello, everybody, and welcome to Film Sack. It's Film Sack, mining the very depths of film entertainment for all mankind, episode 124. My name is Scott Johnson, and joining me tonight, Brian Suicide Flashbacks Dunaway.
Oh, sure. I'd be glad to split the bill for my birthday with you, brother. But how about you add a few things to the bill, like two very expensive dress shirts, a speaker screen for my TV, one luxury car tire, my dad's watch that I had to leave in Mexico, $18.78, a beat-to-hell briefcase, a $1,000 shoe, repainting the interior of my mansion, the week's worth of work I missed, my cocaine you wasted at the hotel, and my childhood memories on the videocassette you taped over with porn. Speaking of the hotel, did you stop the toilet up, you freak?
Oh, man. Nicely done. Wow. Do you know you just gave away the entire plot of the film?
I love that.
That was really good. I was like, it was like the game for dummies is what that was.
Right. Very I'd be nice. So pissed after the revelation. Spoilers.
Yeah,
I'd be so
spoilers,
pissed.
Everybody. Spoilers. Mm. Randy, that shoe cost me $1,000. Jordan.
Aloha, Scott. Brian. I come to you this day a whole man. A very wealthy, very successful, very powerful man. Unfortunately, I've made it this far with a major brain malfunction. Brian Dunaway, even though you've been my trusted advisor for decades, I'm going to go with the word of this chick I met in a restaurant last night. Scott, you're my brother, and we've never been close, but you've always cared deeply for me. Mm. Nonetheless, I'm not going to trust you when I need you most. Brian Ibbett, even though you're a cop and you clearly want to help me solve this thing, after meeting with you once, I'm never going to call you again. Why? Because I'm romancing the stone, damn it. I'm romancing the stone. Wait, does that make no sense?
No.
Tough shit. It doesn't matter if it makes sense as long as we all get you to the huge party for me by the end of this episode.
That was long. You're right. I'm with you there. That was long. I like it,
though. But so full of truth.
Nice job. Also, finally with us, Brian, never trust Spicoli Ibbett.
I love how the segues right into mine. Mm-hmm. So this week on Film Sack, we watched a film that... Randy, I'm speaking directly now to you through the show. Dunaway and Scott can't hear us. You see, they're acting right now. The laughter is acting. You see, I know everything, Randy, and these past 123 shows have simply been part of an elaborate ruse orchestrated by Samantha Jane, wherein we've been completely manipulating your every move in order to get you to this very moment. Mm-hmm. And what have you got to say?
This is interactive.
What do you got to say, Randy? Randy?
Look, I'm crying. It's too
crap.
Much.
We didn't have that as a potential answer to work from. Abort! Abort! And that's why Michael Douglas looks like an old baseball glove.
Oh, love it.
Dude, you're doing community theater. This isn't even an intro anymore. That was awesome.
It. I was really
Holy
crying.
Crap, you guys. Jeez.
Well, it's all three were long.
Yeah, pulling out the stops today. Those were all fantastic.
Thanks for tuning into Film Sack. We're out of time. We'll see you next week.
Nah, we'll hang around. We're going to talk more about the game.
Would you do me a favor and assure me that that wasn't true? Yeah.
it wasn't true. Randy.
Is your top still spinning? Crossing the streams here.
Wow.
It's the game, directed by David Fincher. 1997, the year my daughter was born. She's now 15, so that'll tell you how long ago that was.
Right. 15.
Yeah, just about precisely. Didn't see it when it came out in theaters. Anybody else in my boat, or had you all seen it?
I saw it the night it opened.
Yeah.
Yeah, I think I saw it that weekend.
I don't know what else was opening, but I went to see another movie, and that was sold out.
Oh, that, so you this is your fallback, this movie.
Yeah.
Okay. Yeah. Are we? You know, how about you, Dunaway? Have you seen it?
I'd actually never seen this movie, but I had thought I had seen it, and I'd mentioned on at least two episodes prior to this that I had seen it. I was actually thinking of Surviving the Game with Ice-T.
Oh.
In 94.
Which is on our list, by the way.
And I kept waiting for Ice-T to show up. I'm like, I don't remember this part. I don't remember this part. Where's Ice-T at? I don't remember this part. Yeah. Wait a minute.
Yeah.
I'm wrong.
He was busy doing Johnny Mnemonic.
Right.
Yeah, that we have that on the list, though. So do not despair. We will get to that eventually. But for now, it's The Game. It's a David Fincher joint. It's his first movie after he completed and had a rather successful run with Seven. So a lot of anticipation at the time for his second. Well, not his second movie. This would be his third movie. His first movie, I don't even know if it's the third, but his first movie was Alien 3, which gets a lot of crap. But I really like Alien 3, except for one major problem, which is if you see Alien 3 outside of the rest of the series, if you hadn't seen 1 and 2, especially 2, or Aliens rather, you could go into Alien 3 and go, wow, this is a hard-hitting, cool, kind of awesome movie. But if you see 2 first, and then you go see 3, everybody you loved in 2 is killed.
Yeah, I hate when they do that. It drives me crazy.
Before the credits are finished.
Right.
Well, 2/3 of them are killed before the credits are finished.
All is left is a dog and what's her name? Spoilers, but, you know, that's it.
Right.
So that kind of really hurts its chances. But as a whole, that's a pretty good movie. And I really like 7, except for the part that really pissed me off at the end that made me throw the VHS tape in the snow.
Right.
What's in the snow?
What's in the snow? It's the videotape is in the snow. But I have to say, I'm a fan of Fincher's style, his approach, his whatever. And so why I missed
his
this, I
whatever.
Don't know.
I'm a fan of his whatever.
His, you know, his whatever he does. And it's on display here, certainly. But this is a very different movie than something like 7 or even Zodiac or...
Right.
Any number of Fincher joints. The only one I haven't seen, I'll quit saying joint now. I know people at home hate that. I got some grief in email about, quit calling everything a joint. That's for Spike Lee, and that's it.
Spike Lee.
Spike Lee's joints, that's all you get. All right, okay, fine. Hold your emails. But anyway, what was I saying? Oh, yeah, I haven't seen the one where he's the safe room. What's it called?
Panic Room.
Panic Room. Yeah, how's that? Yeah.
It's okay. It was good back in the day, but I haven't seen it since 2002 when it came out.
The opening credits are awesome.
Mm. Yeah. Often are in his movies. Credits. His movies are good for the opening.
I actually think Panic Room is a good comparison for The Game. It's a really awesome concept that requires tons and tons of suspension of disbelief and is going to get to the end regardless of what it, you know, lies to the audience about along the way.
So, okay, I want to address that because I think Fincher's pretty good at that trick. Maybe other directors wouldn't have pulled it off so well. I don't even have a good comparison. He seems to be the guy to go to when you need that level of suspension of disbelief. Do you think that it worked, though? Like, do you feel like... I mean, obviously, we approach movies... I think we probably approach movies in a slightly different way. I mean, we're watching something...
A little more cynical sometimes.
Yeah.
Right.
So there's a chance we're not just some happy-go-lucky audience member that's pleasantly surprised by what they didn't know they were going to get. We kind of know what we're getting into. We know it's 15 years old. And there are a few things about the age that have kind of hurt
a
little bit.
That's the key. If you saw Fight Club in 1999... You had a really good chance of getting to the end of that film and going, whoa.
Yeah.
You see it now, and because so many movies have done a lot of the same things, you're like, oh, okay, whatever.
Is it kind of like...
That's a good point, yeah.
Is there a Tarantino-esque thing going on? Because I do that when I go back and see, like, Reservoir Dogs or something, and I'll go, yeah, I remember this
seen
being
that
a little...
Times.
This is a little more intense back then because nobody else is doing this. And now everyone's doing it. But that's not their fault, right? They're visionaries. Mm-hmm. So is... Ibbot, is Fincher a visionary? Can we call him that?
I think so. I think regardless of how the writing of a film goes, what you ultimately see is the director's vision. You see the director's perspective of the writing. Yeah. And he does a great job of communicating whoever he's interpreting, he does a great job of interpreting it and really making the visuals another character of the film.
Yeah.
Like, I think the visuals in this are, and this is a perfect example of it. The game has a very, very cool feel to it that makes you, I mean, you spend the whole time questioning what's real and what's not along with Nicholas. So it's and that's something that the director has to convey. That's something that the director has to make you believe in. So.
Yeah,
right.
Yeah. He did a good job of that. I noticed, too, that there's a certain, I don't know, quality to, he belongs to that, to that generation of directors who got their start in video music and did a bunch of MTV stuff early, late 80s, early 90s, and then branched out to film. And now we got a ton of those guys that are all working. Michael Bay is one of them. We don't have to count him, I guess.
Russell Mulcahy.
Yep. Other dudes, Spike Jones.
Spike Jones, who was actually in this movie.
He was. That was weird. At the end, right?
I think it was like one of the ambulance workers, I think, if I'm not mistaken. Or something. Yeah. I'm trying to remember. I saw him in the credits. I didn't see where he was at, though.
Oh, I totally noticed him because I had just seen him in Jackass 3 or 2.
Right.
I can't remember which one I saw that he was in. But he's all random with those Jackass guys for a while. And so I saw his face and went, oh, that's kind of cool. It's probably just a, you know, director buddies helping each other out, whatever.
I'll tell you, this movie will blow you away if you turn the audio down and just spend a few minutes just watching what's going on. And it is just, he's brilliant. It's beautiful.
Yeah, he's a good filmmaker. So, Jodie Foster, check this out. Jodie Foster was originally signed on to play Michael Douglas's sibling in the film. All right, so she was supposed to be a sister. There was going to be no brother, and it was going to be her gift to him, right?
Interesting.
Very interesting. So here's how it went down, though. Foster changed her mind and wanted to appear as Douglas's daughter instead. That's weird.
I'm young enough.
Douglas and director David Fincher were very opposed to this change, so the part went to Sean Penn instead. He makes a much better sister. Foster promptly sued PolyGram to the tune of $54.5 million. Even though her Egg Pictures was one of the film's production companies, the matter was fortunately settled out of court. Now, what's interesting about that is, this is what I find interesting in film, in that business. You can have this big lawsuit, but then you turn right around and bring her into your next movie, which was, well, not her next movie, but a couple movies later.
5 years later, all is forgiven.
Sure, I guess. And that worked out fine. So Spicoli, the brother, is it good? I don't know. I can't tell. This isn't
okay.
This isn't the Sean Penn that I would rave about necessarily.
Okay, so the first scene where Michael Douglas and Sean Penn are riffing off each other, and you get the feeling there's some ad lib in this scene, is in a restaurant. They're meeting up again after being estranged for a while. Blah blah blah. Beautiful acting, just amazing acting. And I couldn't help but credit Sean Penn for that, because Michael Douglas is doing a lot of what he does. He's doing what he does in The American President. He's doing what he does in Wall Street. Whereas Sean Penn is playing this really difficult role, in my opinion. This character, this guy who is carefree, but has a lot of money, doesn't know what to do with it, never has figured out what to do with his life. He has to get that all across really, really fast. And the scene is just awesome. And then for the rest of the film, every time you see Sean Penn, he is playing batshit crazy.
Yeah, yeah. Right. No, I guess that's what I was going to get at. It seemed to start out pretty strong there, and then it got weird.
Well, we've talked about angry acting, and the first time I ever saw any angry acting, first time I ever really noticed it, with Sean Penn. He seems to lean on it very heavily. and so very, very much so in the one scene where they're in the alley down in the steps and they're yelling at each other. I couldn't take that scene seriously between Michael Douglas and him yelling back and forth. I was like, stop.
Do you think they ended up hiring him because Fincher directed most of Madonna's more famous videos and they knew each other that way? I really wondered that.
That's a good question.
Like, how'd you get that guy in here? But also, so Randy, you mentioned that up front, really good scene, good acting, subtle stuff. And then later it got real on the nose. Well, I wonder if the on the nose was intentional. There was a feeling throughout the movie when I knew the game was being played and Michael Douglas didn't know it was being played, where I knew it was, and part of why I think I knew it was is they were going out of their way to overact in those scenes. So Sean Penn was, I'm your brother. I've never been good enough to blah. And I'm going, man, you are just pulling out the stereotypes. You're just dragging out the tropes. Like, why are you doing that all of a sudden? Yeah, my head would go, well, that's because it's because they want us to subtly, whether it works now or not, but they want to subtly say to us, if you really pay attention, clearly Sean Penn's in on the deal.
Right.
Yeah.
Right.
And that's why I had three examples in my greeting of total nonsense in this film. And, right. you know, one is that you would suddenly stop trusting your lifetime attorney, the guy you're paying $500,000 mm-hmm. a year to be everything for your business. You know, you would suddenly stop somehow trusting your brother, which I just don't, right. I don't get. That's like the least likely thing. I don't care how big a dick your right. sibling right. is. It is really, really hard to not trust them. And right. then the third being the cops. I wish they hadn't introduced the cops because
they were dudes though. They worked for the hoo-ha because they were in that cafeteria.
Yes,
later.
But in the very next scene, and then the scene after that, and the scene after that, when crazy crap happens to Michael Douglas's character, he doesn't call the cops. How can he not call the cops? It's like you've got your phone right there. I'm sure that the people at Consumer Recreation Services were like, "Oh, we have all this cop stuff planned out, and he's not calling us."
Damn it. Well, I think he probably. Well, yeah. You're right. You have to suspend your disbelief, but also he probably thought those cops
suspend. You have to send a thing on a vacation.
Oh, yeah, you really do.
Exactly. You have to assume that they've thought of every potential move that he could make. Let's see. How's he going to find that guy? Oh, he's going to go to a Chinese food restaurant that the guy ordered from and look for a freaking picture on the wall to find the guy's name.
Yeah.
What is the connection with the Chinese food in this movie that I could not figure out?
There's two things in this film that I could never figure out. One, who loves Chinese food so much? And two, who hates clothing so much? The love for the Chinese food and the hate for nice clothes.
For expensive shirts and suits.
Oh, right. Gosh.
Dude, wait! Now I hadn't even thought about the Chinese food. Now it's all I can think about. So the first part with the dude from Seinfeld's finale, the lawyer guy, he's got Chinese right. food. He right. goes in there, right. and then later there's a Chinese place where they fall in the dumpsters.
Right, and the chick has got Chinese takeout with her when she goes back to his office.
Yeah,
and there's Chinese food near the end of the movie as well. I mean, every time you see food. It's Chinese food.
What is that about?
I may have had more than one shot of scotch already, but have we heard Scott Fletcher describe this film?
No.
Oh, no. Oh,
what's no. We should have blamed it on the scotch and said, yeah, where you been?
What the hell?
All right, Scott Fletcher, as awkward as this is, could you please tell us more?
The game. Financial genius and cold-hearted loner Nicholas receives an unusual birthday present from his younger brother, Conrad. A gift certificate to play a unique kind of game formulated by CRS.
Oh, that's it.
Okay.
Oh, that's it.
That's it? I was waiting. I was like,
all right, fine. You know what? Just to pepper that, I'll play this that he made.
They f*** you, and they f*** you, and they f*** you. And just when you think it's over, that's when the real f***ing begins.
That was one of the best lines in the film. Although I think my favorite line, I wish there was a way, it's a visual joke. I don't know if you try to even capture it, there's a point where he's well past his breaking point. Mm. He's already begun to develop into the person he's going to be. And he's meeting with his ex-wife and he's leaving the restaurant in a huff. And he just yells out, can I borrow your phone book? And then rips the phone book off the wall. Just goes walking out with it.
Yeah. This is one of those eras that would have benefited from better cellular technology than they had in 97.
Well, one smartphone and you're like, okay, oh, here's CRS on the web. Oh, here's their forums. Oh, people are saying that they're, you know, super elaborate. This guy says first post. This guy says that, you know, whatever you think is fake is really going to be real, or whatever you think is real is going
to
be fake.
Can you imagine with an iPhone how easily he could have privately booked a flight to Tahiti and got himself out of the whole game?
Yeah, just leave.
Right.
Yeah, the game doesn't work so well as well today. It's more, know. You know what? You know where it works? Let me tell you what the new game is. The new game is Inception. That's what that movie is. Right. Because then they say, you know what? We are no longer living in a time where this stuff is technologically possible unless you want to be a period piece and set it in the 80s, which we don't want to do. So we stick it in dreamland where anything's possible and we're smart about it. And it ends up being, you know, a better kind of an overall better experience. But I totally got an Inception vibe multiple times in the movie. Not that it's as good as. I'm just saying there is a tone of Inception that kind of strings through the game.
I really think, though, just to get back to the phone thing real quick, they had cell phones, and he used them, and they always hijacked the phone, or so they told him anyway.
Yeah.
So I don't know how much difference there could be. Now, I did notice the big old fat trope of I'm going to answer the payphones that are ringing.
Oh, trope alert. Right. Oh, my God.
Never do that.
Right.
But it had a hobo in front of it, and he got out of the way.
Right. I'm like, I'm out of here. I'm not answering that. I've seen the movies.
He was probably a plant as well.
Yeah, they rang all the the payphones in the area just in case. Yeah,
I want to say this now so I don't forget about it. And it kept coming up in my head, and I wrote it down multiple times for some reason. So I think it was probably a pretty strong notion in my head. I think that this movie is basically kyfing or ripping off Dickens' Christmas Carol. That's really what this movie is.
Uh-huh.
What?
Now, let's just hear me out. There's no holiday bits, okay? Take the Christmas out of it. But you got grumpy old rich dude who's screwing everybody, and he's going to poor, what's his name, the Armin Schall's freaking publishing company and saying, that's it, you're out, you're fired.
Right.
He's just a complete douche. He's Ebenezer Scrooge in every way. He's left everyone he ever cared about. He doesn't want to even see his brother, who he hates. Doesn't want to see anybody he likes. His ex-wife, even though she's nice, is driving him totally ape crap, and he's hanging up on her as fast as he can. And then suddenly the TV starts talking to him. And from then on, it basically becomes, it's almost like Bill Murray Scrooged in a way, but it basically becomes that story throughout the whole thing. And he's being forced to see his failings, his mistakes. He's brought down to the poorest, lowest level by the time you get to the third act. While there are no, you know, ghosts of present, past, and future, there are definite hints of, well, this is what things were like when I was a kid. This is how they are now. And here's how things are going to be if I can't figure this out. And by the end, I really felt like we were watching one of those movies.
Death as well. Yeah.
But see, there's where I lose it, because the whole point of the game itself, the game within the movie, is to cause him to commit suicide. And the hoped outcome.
No, the hoped outcome is that he realizes what a douchebag he's been and becomes a nicer guy.
Right, and goes and tells the little boy on the street to go buy the biggest turkey he can find and take it over to what's-his-name's house. That's exactly what he's getting at.
No.
The biggest box of Chinese.
They take his clothes away. They take his money away. They take everything away from him. And the problem with him as a character is he doesn't have great relationships to take away, or they would do that too.
Yeah.
Like the only thing left for him is to kill himself. That's the whole point.
You're right that you have to take him to the bottom of the barrel is what you're saying. The lowest possible point, and for him it was suicide. And clearly they planned ahead for that, because they put a giant thing with a target on it that he just happened to jump out and hit.
Right. Yeah. And let's say, you know, he wasn't thinking, well, geez, I don't want to die like my dad did jumping off a building. Hey, I've got this gun right here. I know it's got real bullets in it. Perfect. Goink.
Yeah.
Oh, crappiest birthday party ever.
Yeah. Like I could survive this fall, or I could shoot myself in the head.
Right.
Brian makes a good point. Brian makes
that glass. Ooh, that's scary. I think I'll just shoot myself. And
Brian makes a point.
Yeah, see?
Well, that gun was loaded with blanks, and that was not very well communicated. And I just wish that there was a version of this movie where he sprinted over to the other side of the roof and jumped off that side of the building.
That's what I'm getting. Okay, you've just opened the wound that is my problem with the movie. There's actually two problems I have with it, and we'll get to the other one in a minute, which is about the very end. But this idea that this group is somehow smart enough to ad-lib their way into him picking the right side of the building to jump off of.
Not just the right side, but I mean the right... stuntmen train for years to be able to land the right way on one of those bags and position themselves so that
go down head first and it's all over.
Right. And I hear a guy on the radio.
Feet first.
Jeez. When he jumps and jumps right onto the bag, I hear a guy on the radio in the movie, someone who's an operative go, he's right on target, everybody. He's right on target. I'm thinking, well, isn't that freaking convenient there, Officer Nobody?
Now the big trope of the film is that because the whole game is so expensive, you can do anything. It's like Chekhov's Army is the name of the trope. Okay. And you have because Connie, his brother, is able to spend millions of dollars, that everything can be accounted for. Like that building, that the roof of that building could have literally had operatives all the way around the lining of it, all dressed in black, all behind screens, right? Ready to grab him if he went to the wrong spot. You know what I'm saying? Like you can work out a lot of these little plot holes just by throwing money at them. And that's a trope. And it kind of stinks because it takes away from the fun, you know?
It would have been fun to watch. massive, guys in black pushing him around. That would have been funny.
Massive black wind or massive wind machine, expensive wind machine. Yeah. Oh, he's like 3 feet to the left. Perfect.
And have him not know what's going on. I've killed my brother. Everything's falling apart. That actor guy's dead from Seinfeld. What am I going to do now? I'll walk over here. Oh, I'm even going crazy. It feels like there's wind on me now. Like right. It would just fall apart.
This feels like the Truman Show at this point.
Yeah. Oh, yeah. Truman Show is another.
Yeah. That's that. I might have to write another Twitter post because I was going to say that I'd seen this movie before, but I realized I just watched the first 10 minutes of Total Recall and the last 2 hours of The Truman Show.
Nice.
Yeah.
Hey, got to use it anyway.
I get to use it anyway. I'll write something.
But, you know, of the movies we've seen. Okay. So, wait, there was my number one problem is falling on the bag. Fine. Whatever. I'll accept it for what it is. And Randy's explanation, you know, that's how they would, you know, they would just pay the problem away. Fine. I'll even accept that. What the hell happened at the end? I don't understand how those credits came up. He goes out there, chases down Chicky Babe and says,
"Oh,
I want to go." She says, "Well, I'm going to the airport bar or whatever. Do you want to get a drink with me?"
Right.
He thinks you gotta give me the trope alert on this. Okay. Hold on here. What the hell happened there?
It's the did she or didn't she trope.
In this case,
it's did he or didn't he. And we're supposed to be left with just the mystery of it at the end. She says, you know, you could come with me to the airport, have a cup of coffee at the restaurant, whatever. And he's like the richest man alive. So, of course, he could. He could end up buying the airline. But instead of letting you see him get into the cab and have a nice ending, he's standing there considering it.
But that isn't important at all to the story. Like, it doesn't have any impact on anything. If anything, I understand. Okay, at the end of Inception, same trope is in effect. They've got that totem going, and it kind of wobbles, and you're not sure. They leave you kind of wondering. I know there's a lot of argument about that, but
right. And with Inception, the whole point is to confuse you. Right? Like, you don't know if the point of the movie actually was real or not. Right? In this case, like, you got the whole thing. The story's been told. We just want to mess with you a little bit.
It was like a new thing. Like, did he go with her or he didn't? Stay tuned for the sequel where it's a freaking rom-com. You know, like, it's a romantic comedy just waiting to happen now because we're done with the mystery part. I didn't like that at all.
Really? It didn't faze me at all. I felt like it was almost a little bit of pondering whether or not anything that he saw now is real, and if any change is really going to take into effect.
Well, like in Truman Show, another example.
Right.
Great ending because he finds, by the way, I don't want to spoil Truman Show for people, so stop listening if you haven't seen it, because it's a great movie. But if when Truman leaves, he's in the water, he hits that wall, right?
Right.
And he goes and finds that door and waves. And says the little line.
Stands up there, talks to Ed Harris for a little bit.
Yeah, Ed Harris in the beret. And then he leaves, and he walks out through that door. There's your ending. And it's poignant. It's exuberant in a way that's like, oh, there's freedom finally. There's closure to this. Even though his whole life's ahead of him, it's going to be weird and hard and crazy. This part had a door, you know?
It also fits the character.
Right.
Right. The problem with this weird tacked on crap in the street at the end of the game is it doesn't fit the character. This guy, he had $600 million in the bank.
Yeah.
His character has changed so much
that he's going to follow an actress that he doesn't actually know to the airport.
He just literally was going to kill himself. He had gotten to the point that he was going to kill himself. I mean, if that's not impacting to an individual.
But Brian, let me ask you this. And I'll admit, I can't think of a better way to do it. I don't know how else you end this movie, honestly, because really the ending should have been him in the bag looking at the sky and having people help him and check his pulse and have that fade out and say.
And the t-shirt. No, Sean Penn holds up the t-shirt.
Yeah.
That was a great shirt.
That'd be fine. And then have it fade out. That's an ending. How else to write it after that when they got to go, thanks for coming. Thanks for coming. Like it's any old normal party.
Right.
I don't know where you end it from there either. So hats off to Fincher for trying something, but it left me like going, well, I hate you, movie. That's dumb for you to do that to me at the end. Because for the most part, for the rest of the movie, really enjoyed myself, highly entertained.
We haven't heard from Ibbot yet, and I'm curious what he thought about the ending.
On the ending, the tacked on stuff at the ending?
The one where he's leaving with the girl and he stands
I want to hear your impression of both. Like, how did you feel watching through the last 10 minutes of the movie?
Well, the shock ending of it really being a game. I mean, that, right. Obviously, I'm going by when I saw it back in 1997.
Right.
Totally surprised. Well, not totally surprised. Mostly surprised.
Yeah.
You know, because I thought, all right, because they've got this.
I'm mostly surprised. Mostly not surprised. Totally.
I mean, I knew that, you know, you kind of go in expecting that with all these twists and turns, there is going to be a fake ending. And you think it's the one where Sean Penn comes out with the champagne and gets shot. And you're like, oh, crap. Okay. Well, there you go. That sucks.
Right.
As far as the tacked on ending, I mean, yeah, Scott pinned it perfectly. How do you close this? Because let's say you do go through the whole rigmarole of all the, all right, hey, party's over, now what? Okay, guess I'm going to go back to my empty house and live the rest of my empty life there.
Well, the thing is, there's a reason why movies...
I'm a clown now.
There's a reason why movies have people riding off into the sunset, because it provides you with some form of finality. And it can't all be Westerns, but usually movies have some form of the sunset ride. And I felt like this was weird... Not quite that, but definitely in that direction. That, and they could have just done it different. Like, you have to, I respect movies like Quarantine, where they're like, you know what? Nobody's going to survive this. Everyone dies. Spoiler, by the way.
Yeah, thanks.
And that's rough, because you're like, oh, man. And you really have a different kind of emotion leaving that. Nobody makes it. Nobody has to make it. It's a kind of a brave thing to do, but people like their happy ending, or at least their, I don't know, sort of resolution. But he did a thing here. So maybe I respect it, but he did a thing here that didn't make me happy for him, didn't make me anything for him. It just made me go, what the hell happened? Like, what? Don't at least put him in the car and have him drive off, or at least, I don't know, have him.
Right. He could have, well, he could have just, you know, simply said, you know, I'd like to start over. Can I get to know the real you? I'd like that. Okay. And then credits roll, you know, like,
yeah. But just no.
It's tripey. It's, I know no. that it's sappy and stupid. I know.
It's a really already a really badly formed character, and he's this rich guy who drives himself everywhere. Like, he has a maid, or not just a maid. He has like a household, a complete 100% household single servant.
Right,
but
right.
He drives himself everywhere in his BMW 7 Series.
Yeah.
Everywhere. He never has someone else drive him. So I guess the point is supposed to be that he's a control freak. But what it comes out being is, you don't know any rich people. Because rich people don't ever drive themselves anywhere. And the whole film is like that. There's all these things where this really rich guy never tries to once cash in on what all rich guys do, which is, I could buy and sell you. You will tell me what I want to know right this minute. And in the end, that if you're going to change that completely, let it be the change that he experiences with his ex-wife. That was really cool. He actually saw her a couple of times. He meets with her. He steals her car. He ends up seeing her again at the
steal it.
Okay, whatever. He left it at the zoo. He sees her again at the party. There's this really touching moment, and I'm like, there's a great joke coming where his brother is so glad that he's splitting the bill because it's got seven zeros on it or something, and like that's all so cool. And I'm left with, yay, he's repaired his relationship with his ex-wife, and she's pregnant with some other dude's kid. He's repaired his relationship with his brother. What are you doing starting some crazy relationship with somebody you don't know?
Just kind of run off into the sunset. I keep saying
so
sunset.
So how do you see...
He wouldn't do that.
So at what point do you see the credits rolling? Like Scott said, you know, he's in the bag looking straight up. People are checking in on him and checking his
T-shirt,
eyes.
T-shirt, what?
For me, it's right after the joke about the price of things. Like, they, wow, yeah. Like, they, maybe you show James Rebhorn dancing in an Aloha shirt.
And then close the curtain.
Like, you know that shot of James Rebhorn dancing in an Aloha shirt? Maybe you end with that.
This should be interesting. I think we should all take like the last 10 minutes and then cut it at it right where we think it should end.
Oh, that would be fun.
Yeah,
the movie was long. The movie was too long for me, so maybe they should cut it right after he escapes from the car in the bay.
That was intense, man. That freaked me out.
Yeah.
That had me going.
And what did they have people standing by in case he didn't get out?
I got that impression because if you watch the... Oh, by the way, scarred up face from Gladiator, who was the driver who bailed out.
I wanted to say Phoenix. Yeah. I'm glad.
Looks like Eddie Vedder.
He's great. I love that guy. But
I thought you were talking about Joaquin Phoenix with this scarred up face.
No.
Sorry.
Terrible. You mean the one hair lip? You mean not the whole scarred up face?
Right.
Yeah. But when he was struggling like that, in my head, I'm going, all right. Well, if they're a nefarious group, and that's where I got fooled a few times, then they're just going to let him die because that was the point. Or if he really struggles here, it's going to be like Mythbusters where they got to get Jamie out of the car. You know, like there's somebody's off in the wings. They're going to dive in there. Money's no barricade. Barricade, money's no, what's the word? Money's no,
money's object? No object.
Object, thank you. It's no barricade. Okay. Money is no barricade.
I like it.
That's the new phrase. Everyone start using it. But I don't know where I was going with that, except that I think that was the idea the whole time, is that he was never in any real danger. They were always going to come in and save him if something got weird. Mm-hmm. And he was being tailed everywhere, not just, you know, not just by that dude in the car, not just by the guy at the airport pointing out his ink stain. Oh, how elaborate was the ink stain? See, that kind of stuff. I really enjoyed it. Like there's stuff, that stuff, as some of it was written on the wall so far ahead, I could see it coming a mile away. But I still really had fun with the ride of it. I knew at one point this was all going to be bull crap. And when he shot his brother, I'm watching it in 2012, but I knew when he shot Spicoli, it wasn't a real shot. I knew he wasn't dead.
Right.
Because I just knew.
I thought he was dead. I thought he was dead.
No, I knew that was going to go on.
Also thought the poor guy in the bathroom who didn't have any toilet paper was still stuck in there even, you know, 20 hours later.
I think that guy was also the guy who played the private investigator who gets his tire shot. I think that was the same guy.
Yeah, it could have been. There was
in the toilet paper.
There was a note about the voice was somebody. The
scene in the film I like the least. Nicholas Van Orton is in the executive bathroom in the executive lounge in the airport. Some other executive is out of paper, and he just walks off like "F you, buddy."
Yeah.
I seriously wanted to grab him by the ear and drag him back. Help this guy.
He couldn't spare a square.
Man. If you go into the bathroom and you take the seat and you don't check that you got tickets, you have luck.
Now, favorite scene in the movie is when he walks into the room, into the cafeteria, the CRS cafeteria, and sees all these people that have been acting in his life for the past.
I know
three
the cops. The cops were there. The freaking private investigator guy was there. They're all just like hanging out, eating.
Yeah, I mean, you just imagine your life. You know, you walk into some place and you see, you know, the guy that just served you a sandwich at Jimmy John's, and the person at the post office, and the other five people in line behind you at the post office, and all that. You know,
that was cool.
Yeah.
Well, that was
freaked
pretty good.
That crap out.
Right. You know, for me, the best scene in the film is when after finding himself in a freaking sarcophagus in Mexico, he's gone through all the effort of getting back to San Francisco. Like, it's a crazy amount of effort he's had to go through to get back home in a couple of days. The whole film is supposed to take place in a week, 1 week.
How will he ever know, by the way? I'm gonna keep going.
He gets back. He's got this awful thing on his nose where he got hit. And he's just like the 15th set of clothes for him have been destroyed, dirtied. And he's in his ex-wife's car, and he's sitting there, and some dude comes to carjack him with a tire iron at his neck, and he just pulls his huge gun. He's got the biggest revolver on the planet. He just pulls it up out of the seat and points it at this guy's face and says, "I'm in a very fragile place right now." Dude runs off. He puts the gun down and goes right back to what he was doing. There's a beautiful, beautiful scene.
Yeah, that was pretty good. And then not only that, he just pulled it out of the seat. He pulled it out of one of those like felt boxes. It was
a gun-shaped hole in a Bible.
Right.
Michael Douglas's performance in this, so many scenes like that, the best heat of his career, in my opinion.
Wow.
This is his peak.
It was pretty dang good. I think my favorite scene would have to be when he's all the typos on his wall from the graffiti. I mean, I'm pretty sure I saw Kooksucker.
Yeah. Yeah.
Crackin' prick. I don't know what that is. No.
Crackin' prick.
It's what it said. Crackin'. I don't. There was so many typos in that bad language graffiti. It was hilarious.
I enjoyed that stuff. Thought the music was cool.
One Jefferson Airplane.
Give you a freaking thing.
Yeah, I think they used different Jefferson Airplane songs.
Yeah, they got a deal because after that, we built the city business. Got cheap. All right. Also, he claimed he was 48 in this movie. I wrote a note that there's just no way. So I looked it up, and he was like mid-50s. Just throwing that out there.
What a crappy birthday if everybody's calling you on your 48th birthday and telling you, oh, yeah, well, you know, this year your dad killed himself. Yeah, well, I was trying to forget about that. Thank you for reminding me, ex-wife and everybody else.
Yeah, I'll just go back to watching Max Headroom freaking Daniel Shore on the TV.
That's exactly what I wrote on that. What is up with the when he comes into play, all of a sudden it becomes very Max Headroom when he's actually talking to him.
I don't know. You know what? If money's no object, you actually get NPR's Daniel Shore to act out that stuff. And they have a private feed coming into his house. Mm-hmm. Yeah. Because money's no object, so you can pay the biggest newscaster in the world. But it seems like that sort of thing would get out, you know? Like, mm-hmm. you can't really maintain your position as, you know, Wolf Blitzer if on the side you're doing this with a clown head in the room.
I can be bought, by the way. Pretty cheap, actually.
Not too bad. But anyway, so he's pushing 70, by the way, Michael Douglas. Daniel Shore died last year at the age of 89. Wow, right. Something like that. Respected newsman. Like, that guy's been around forever, did a bunch of stuff in the 60s and 70s.
He was also in a FilmSack film, The Net, remember?
Oh, right.
He was the guy on the TV in
The
Net.
You're right. He had a period there where he was like, oh, whatever, I'll do it. What else? I already talked about the Christmas Carol. I'm telling you, Christmas Carol, man. That's what this movie was.
Huh.
Oh, Amarin Mueller-Stahl.
Armin. Mueller,
however you say Mueller. It. He is one of my favorite guys to watch do anything. And I love him. If it gives me an opportunity to recommend people check out the movie Avalon, 1992. One of my favorite movies ever of all time. I absolutely freaking love that movie. It's a Barry Levinson, I'm not going to say joint, film. It's got him in it as this immigrant, and it's all about him and his family. It's got Aidan Quinn. I can't remember his wife's name in it, but she's fantastic. Oh, Joan Plowright's in it. What's his name? The guy that does the really good walking impression.
Jay Moore?
No, he was the Christmas Vacation. He was the neighbor. Oh, crap.
Julie Louise Dreyfus.
Back up. Guy in Usual Suspects. Short, had a hat, wisecracking.
Oh, yeah, I know who you're talking about. Comedian guy.
He has like a web show now.
Fenster or.
Shite.
Yeah.
I've already forgotten what film we're talking
anyway,
about.
Anyway, we're talking about Avalon. Good. It is one of the best movies ever freaking made, and that guy's in it, and he's great. So anytime
Kevin
I can see
Pollack.
That guy. Kevin Pollak, thank you.
Yeah.
He's so good. So good. Anyway, just wanted to mention him.
Yeah. I still think Armin Mueller-Stahl is amazing. Like, he was just in the, just a few years ago, he was in The International, the Clive Owen film.
Those are the last things he's done in a while. Well, he's pretty old now, right? Born in like 1930.
Just amazing performance every time.
Always compelling. Always interesting. Yeah. Let's see. Born in December of 1930. That would put him at what? I can't do the math.
Coming up on 82.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. And he's just awesome. Last movie he did was in 2009, so that's too bad.
Yeah, it was cool, though, because he was playing a character in this film that didn't have to be in the film. It was sort of one of the few things in the movie that wasn't really a part of the game. Mm-hmm. It's just what happened to be going on when the game started.
Yeah.
And I really like the way he played this character. Like, he's it's almost like he's in a different movie, and the character from the Michael Douglas's Nicholas Van Orton character is jumping from this movie into that one and back.
Yeah,
and there's this scene where Armin Mueller-Stahl is sitting on a couch in a really nice hotel room smoking a cigar, and the way he plays that character throughout that whole scene, I'm just like, man, I want that to be my grandpa or something.
Yeah, he's just great.
It's the most interesting man in the world, is what he is.
I just sent you guys a thing in Skype, a picture of him sitting next to a very small Frodo.
Nice.
One of his earliest roles.
Next to a small Frodo.
and he's really good in this movie as well. You guys just need to see that movie. It's so good. Avalon. If you haven't seen it, Avalon, so good.
Wow.
Can we agree that James Rebhorn's performance in this film is just awesome?
Remind me, James Rebhorn.
Rebhorn, he's the person, the actor.
Guy from Seinfeld.
Yeah, the person you keep saying is from Seinfeld.
Yeah. He's all right. He's a guy I see every time and go, oh, it's that guy. And then I have a kind of a hard time getting past the fact that he's that guy.
Right.
He's good.
Apparently playing a doctor in TV pays a lot less than playing a doctor in real life because he was riding around in that station wagon with the wood paneling.
Yeah.
Well, maybe that was so fake. Good. Maybe that was fake.
Maybe so.
You know what I mean?
Right.
Yeah.
It makes me question everything.
Movie also reminded me of Vertigo, the movie. Mm. Not the.
We need to see that movie. That's an awesome movie.
Yeah, that's a good movie. So I on the whole, this is one of my favorite film sack movies we've done. I really enjoyed it.
I love this movie.
Really? Yeah.
So you, when you were watching it last night, you emailed us and said you were just getting started and wow, David Fincher's the man and it's all this stuff. And all I could think was there's no way that Scott gets to the end of this film and doesn't go off the rails. Like,
no, for me, it busts at the ending a little bit, but for the most part, it kind of held up for me throughout. I didn't really have any problems. I think the tone worked and still looks good. Everything looked really good.
Fantastic,
like just well filmed, and I don't even like Michael Douglas. You guys, he drives me kind of nuts.
Interesting.
And almost everything he's in, I don't like him.
Right, I really hate him every time, and he plays it really good. And maybe he just plays a little bit too good. I hate him every time he's someone with money. And this movie is like that.
Like Wall Street. Michael Douglas is the freaking worst. Michael Douglas.
I hate that.
I know. I don't like him either. And he's a bit like that in this.
But maybe it's maybe some purpose.
Yeah, he's kind of a.
I'm trying to think of a film where he isn't like this. Like,
I know. I was trying to think of it too. Like, even in stuff like Unfaithful, he's. Oh yeah, okay. Falling Down. All right, he doesn't have any money in Falling Down.
All right, but like this is so his character from A Perfect Murder and The War of the Roses, and it's practically the exact same character as the American President, played a little differently, but it's really similar. Like, it's his thing. This is what he does.
Yeah, mm-hmm. And he's worth $200 million, and I don't think he's worth $200 million. I think he's all right. I think he's okay. Whatever. You're born into a big actor family. I think his dad was way cooler. I just don't find him very compelling on screen.
I think this is a perfect casting, though. I think he did a great.
He was okay. I think you could have found someone else, but he's fine. It's not. I don't think the movie's made any worse because he's in it. But he's just kind of a dick, and I don't mean in real life. I don't know him. He's got a hot wife. Whatever. You can do it.
I was gonna say, Mr. Douglas, if you're listening, I really enjoyed your performance, and I'd love to come kiss your ass.
But the
person.
Way he just the, his characterizations, I just. They're not my style, but this was okay. Right. This was all right. I'm trying to think of another one. Like, I have a great distaste for things like, what was the one with the blonde? The freaking, with the Sharon Stone. I can't think of it. Basic Instinct.
Basic Instinct.
That movie, I hate him in that movie. Like, his character, I just never can root for the guy.
Okay, let's stop right here. How do we like the Romancing the Stone and the Jewel of the Nile?
Jewel of the Nile is forgettable as hell.
It's got its place.
Yes.
But the first one I liked. I thought it was good.
Yeah, entertaining.
But he's no Indiana Jones.
Oh, no.
Not even close.
No, but the film is supposed
He's not even Alan Quartermain. I mean, come on.
Yeah, and that's the point of the film, is he's supposed to be the ridiculous mirror, sort of cracked mirror image of those characters.
Yeah, right. And that's fine. Danny DeVito's my favorite thing in those movies. Also, the former beauty of what's-her-name. And what she's become now. She looks like Jabba the Hutt now. You know who I'm talking about. Kathleen Turner.
Kathleen Turner.
Oh, yeah.
I used to think she was so good looking. And now she's, give me another burger.
I don't know that you're right about that.
Have you seen her lately?
I have not.
It's shocking.
I have not.
It's shocking.
I will Google her now.
I think the Medical Association of America calls it.
Google.
They call it Carrie Fisher syndrome.
Oh.
And then of course the War of the Roses reunites them, and that's a hard movie to watch.
Yeah.
That all three of these actors from the Romancing the Stone, Jewel of the Nile come back together for War of the Roses, and. Man, the characters treat each other so badly. They never stop. Like the whole movie, you're just like worn out by the way they treat each other.
It's like Fierce Creatures. It's that sort of thing where they reunite everybody. Not a fan of that. I think that's always been kind of weird.
Really?
Yeah.
Then Christopher Guest is a huge letdown for you.
No, that's fine because that feels more like the same troupe. That sounds like it looks like the same improv troupe doing a new movie. That doesn't bother me. But when it's like totally different story, totally different characters, but the same actors, something about that fries me.
I think Fierce Creatures suffered because Fish Called Wanda was so good.
Yeah.
You know, Waiting for Guffman was good, but then you get to things like Best in Show and
and they really hit their stride, you know.
Oh, okay. I was gonna say, like, the Best in Show was awesome, and then Mighty Wind was really funny.
Exactly. Yeah. Like, you start off maybe not as good, and you go up from there, and seeing those same actors in those roles. I mean, I'm sorry, in different roles, you can get past. But when Fish Called Wanda was so good, then almost anything you do after that is gonna be a letdown.
All I'm saying is, in 2012, if Michael Douglas, Kathleen Turner, and Danny DeVito were making a comedy, I would go see it.
You would go see it?
Yes.
Really?
Yes. That
could happen. Why not?
Oh, no.
All right. Well, Kathleen Turner, good luck to you.
All right. Via Warshawski, we should watch that. That movie? Oh, dear Lord.
Yeah, I'll do that. What is that?
Oh, that's that where she's the private investigator.
A spy, yeah.
Oh, is she nude in it?
Oh, I hope not.
A good deal of nudity. She used to do a lot. She had no problem taking her clothes off back in the day. She was into it.
Not.
Yeah, I totally have. Also, same thing.
Oh, you know, I will say this for her. She is okay. So she's looking a little rough. She's born in 54. She looks a little rougher than you'd think for being born in 54.
Wait. We're still talking about somebody that wasn't in the game.
Okay, yeah, we're talking about Kathleen Turner. But I want to say this about her real quick. She hasn't had any major work done, and I respect that. So she can look as lumpy as she wants. I think it's fine.
Look as lumpy as she wants.
She's like old enough to be a great grandmother. I think she looks fantastic.
All right, fine. She looks all right. So we're gonna. Who's our goofy photo? Dunaway, have you found anybody in here you think is the best? James Rebhorn's pretty good.
Right. I looked really hard to find somebody, and it was just the only person that cracked me up was we're gonna do with her link. I just must have disclosed it. She looks angry in one picture, then happy in the next. Hold on a second.
I just linked you one. An actor named John Aprea was one of the executives. His picture on IMDb looks like someone was messing around with Camera Plus.
Right.
Like they were let's try a bunch of.
It looks like he has liver damage.
Like they were turning the tint knob on the old 1980s color TV.
Yeah, it's the weirdest picture.
Well,
this was the other girl I had. She's Kathy Jean Harris, and I'll send you a link to that real quick. But she's got, if you look at her IMDb, she's got a happy and then an angry and then a happy and then an angry.
All right, we'll check her out.
I'm showing picks. My range. Oh,
yeah. But I think we'll have to go with Randy on that though. John Aprea with his failing liver looks pretty
good. I don't know how to describe it.
Ew. Oh, and she's the neighbor. She's the fake roommate.
Oh, yeah, right.
Yeah. Boy, she's only done 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6 movies.
What's the infant condition when your child turns orange? I don't know. Like this guy.
Jaundice, yeah.
It's just weird, this dude.
He looks like an Oompa Loompa.
Yeah, he really looks like the results I get when I choose random filters in Camera Plus.
Oh, man. Well, on that note, let's do some clips. How about this one? This is, hold on. There it is. This is one where something happens. Oh, yeah, Seymour Butts.
It's obviously some sort of prank.
What?
Well, a gentleman called requesting to have lunch with you. I tried to assure him that you were very busy.
What's his name?
A Mr. Seymour Butts.
Under the bleachers by Seymour Butts.
She couldn't figure out it was a prank. Did she even need to bring it to him?
Oh, that's really funny.
Right. No,
because, the deal was he thought, oh, this is Spicoli's work, right?
Mm-hmm. Right.
Yeah. That's stupid. here's your F California. All right. It's just nice and short.
California.
Yeah, there you go.
Yeah, smoking it up, baby.
That's right. Showing, he was smoking
This was the mid-90s when these things were starting around in California and New York.
Right. Yeah, they would actually bring it up in movies like explicitly. Mm-hmm. Like, oh, it's illegal here now. Yeah, right. That happened a lot. I feel guilty when I what?
I feel guilty when I masturbate.
Oh, right. My gosh.
Right. I love that whole thing. The prior question was like to kill animals. Now I could think of every time you masturbate, you kill a kitten or something.
That's what you thought of?
This is pre-internet kind of, well, there's a little bit of internet going on. Yeah.
I capped it out and made it louder.
I feel guilty when I masturbate.
So I can use it anytime I want.
Nice. Is that a question or is he making a statement? I'm just not sure.
Yes to both.
Both, dude. Let's see. Here's a toast. A toast, everyone. A toast.
I wish I could go back and do it for the first time all over again. Here's to new experiences.
All right. So what I liked about that scene, he's in that like really dark leather room with those other businessmen who had been through the game. Right. And Fincher has a way of making you think that that those dudes are super creepy, that they know some horrible thing you don't know. They're never going to tell you, but they're kind of tainted because of their experience. You find out, oh no, these guys probably had altered their very reality in a positive way, like him, wonderful because of it.
No, you see those guys in the cafeteria near the end. They're just actors from CRS. And
one of them he knows from like years and years of working with him.
No. He walks into that gentleman's club. He asks the bartender, who are the two new guys? Oh. And then he sits down and talks to the two new guys because he heard them talking about CRS in the locker room.
Oh, I thought it was just one that he didn't know.
No, trust me on this. It's so ridiculous because he's talking to two people he's never met before. He asks them a question. They don't answer it. And he, a very rich, powerful man, doesn't say, hey, asshole, answer my question. What, you know, like the whole film, he never once gets mad at someone for refusing to answer his question.
Except his brother.
I think. Yeah, that's true.
If I... Randy has convinced me all rich people are complete dicks. Like, it doesn't matter who they are. They must all be dicks.
No. He just doesn't. He is not a complete character of a rich person. He really is never portrayed as someone who is used to always getting their way and being able to buy their way. That doesn't make you a dick. Well, if you can always buy anything you want, it just makes you different than most people.
I think if you make a habit of screwing other people with your money so you can get what you want, I think that kind of makes you a dick. Just a little bit. Just a little short dick. Not a long one.
Not a full.
A little stumpy dick.
A full slog.
Oh, my gosh. Oh, no.
All right, moving on. Let's see. How about TV is talking to him. Here's that bit with Daniel Shore.
Are you going to spend the rest of the evening prying at that clown's mouth?
Maybe.
I don't.
It's frustrating for me if you don't pay attention.
Yeah, it was totally Max Headroom, dude.
Yeah, catch the wave, go.
Beer, boop, boop. I don't know why I just did that song from Yellow. I was thinking of Art of Noise. Didn't they do a bunch of stuff for Max Headroom?
Okay, so first of all. that song that you just
Not
Art of Noise. Yeah. They did a song for a Michael J. Fox movie that wasn't Back to the Future, which featured Max Headroom. They did it for Secret of My Success.
Yeah, I remember that.
Really? Yeah.
But
but Max Headroom did something with Art of Noise. That's all I was saying. Didn't they?
I don't think so.
I am almost 100% sure he did.
You mean from the TV show, the long...
Yeah, they may have been a music video or something that was like a Max Headroom.
Oh, yeah, they did. Paranoimia, yes. Okay. They had the... Right. I was thinking the TV show, like, did they do background music or scoring for it? No, they did. They had the song on In No Sense Nonsense called Paranoimia, which had Max Headroom.
And he was all stuttering in it.
One of the first concerts I went to was the Rainbow Music Hall here in Denver and saw Art of Noise live, and they had a big TV screen where Max Headroom came out during that song.
I feel like those guys were ahead of their time.
Yeah.
Ahead of their time. Ran out of toilet paper. So here's this guy in the bathroom. This always makes me laugh. Here it is.
I need some toilet paper. I ran out.
Come on, man.
I snuck into this executive bathroom.
I didn't know.
Yes, I'm flying coach later. Yes, why do you ask?
All right. As promised, every time there's a 555 number, I capture it. And here's this movie's 555 number.
Just give me the number.
555-1111.
Call you back. 555-1111. Keisha knew he was in the game. Yeah.
555 quadruple one is what she should have said.
Yes. When you give your phone number out, is it, you know, like 323? Or do you say 323-419-60?
Nobody says it like a three-digit 100 number, I don't think. Do they?
No.
That's
no one that I know of. But you always do feel a little stupid saying 555.
Yeah, but you say
1111. That would sound weird. Say if you say out loud 555-1111, I mean, that would drive you insane.
Well, you could do 1111. You go 555, 1111. Okay.
You just write a number into the script that's easier to say and doesn't throw off the audience.
You don't even say any number at all, ever. You don't need to say it. You just say, yeah, they called here.
I'll connect you to them right now.
In that utopia, you just say five and one, and they'll just know that there's two more fives and then three more ones.
Dial the typical
pressing,
area
keep
code.
Keep pressing one until someone answers.
All right. All right. Here is a serious, angry acting moment. I got a couple of these, but this one is from Michael Douglas. Listen to this. This go out.
Who hired you?
Oh, man.
Who hired you?
He's asking the questions. He's going nuts. He's
starting to lose it. And then his brother comes in.
You can have pictures of me wearing
Take it. I take it back. This is Michael Douglas again. Sorry. Here it is. Here's him yelling.
You can have pictures of me wearing nipple rings. Captain Kangaroo. The only thing they care about is the stock.
Yeah.
Well, not going to lie. I laughed.
Bleeping. He's really bleeping Captain Kangaroo there.
Yeah. Yeah, there was a nasty line right before that.
That made me laugh.
Okay, now here's the yelling bit.
What is wrong with you? What are you on?
Oh, I'm sorry, Nick. I'm sorry I didn't live up to expectations.
Oh, bullshit.
I'm not you. I'll never be you. I don't want to be you.
There you go again.
I'm your brother.
Always pushing the responsibility out on me.
Oh, that whole part made me irritated.
Right, me too.
Because it was just
fake. I want out of this movie.
It was fake. Okay. Oh, you guys. So when he comes out of the water, he's been trapped in the car, right? So he bobs out of the water like a freaking bar of soap in the tub. Here's the sound Michael Douglas makes. I dare anyone to prove to me that this is actually him making this noise.
Okay, all right.
Here you go. That is not freaking him.
That's supposed to be, that's actually a trope. I needed that.
Here, I'll do a trope and then play it. Hold on, here we go. And then I'll play it again.
We've talked about this. We've talked about this before. There's some weird thing where if you're underwater for a long time or if you're comatose for a long time, or if you're, you know, like any for any reason we need to reveal that you are coming back to life, we have to do so with this crazy intake of breath that like sounds nothing. It doesn't sound human. He sounds like a bird.
Like a turkey.
Awesome.
All right, I'm a big Howard Shore fan.
Yes.
Older uncle to Pauly Shore, maybe familiar with their work. No, I like Howard Shore, I like his music, and Lord of the Rings isn't the same without it, blah, 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 right? But it's kind of bad in this movie. There are bits of it I like, but this weird discordant piano thing he decided to stick into everything really bugged me, so I capped a bit of it so I could explain it, so here's 5 seconds of that. I didn't like the whole beep, beep, doo, 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 and then sometimes it'd be more discordant, sometimes less. And I know it was kind of like, oh, his descent into madness. What's real? I don't know. But I didn't like it. It's a bad choice. Bugged me through most of the movie.
Okay. All right. It didn't have a unifying theme.
Yeah.
And it didn't use a full orchestra.
Right.
So if those are two things that are really important to you, this is not the score for you.
It's not that I have to have those things. It was the combination. That was a bad example because that was mostly the piano, but it stuck out to me. But there are parts where there was like a sweeping sounding something behind it, and then they would tinkle that in at the most discordant, opposite, horrible keys possible. And I know what it was trying to do. I know what it's trying to evoke. I didn't like it. It's kind of like, what's it like? I can't think of another example. But some movies do this, and I just thought it was weird.
I rather enjoyed it. I'm a pianist, and it was very much solo piano for most of the film, and I enjoyed it. But I could see that it's not a score you want to go by.
No, yeah, I'm not going to rush out and pick that up like I would the Lord of the Rings one. Right.
You start playing that in the background while you're, coding or cooking or doing something, you're going to want to shoot the dog.
Yeah, exactly. Maybe it works.
Who do you work for?
Here is one last clip of, let's see, this is him farting. Just kidding. That's it. Man. That's the last one I have. Let's play this. It's time for awards, everybody. Time for our Film Sack Awards. That's where we award this film various awards based on its proficiency in these following areas. The first one is the Make You Forget How Not Real This Group Would Ever Be Award. What? How Not Real This Group Would Ever Be Award. What? Oh, right. I know what it was. It's the whole suspense of disbelief thing.
Yeah.
It's just bad.
There's too much that could potentially go wrong. Mm-hmm. You really have to suspend disbelief that, that he's going to follow this exacting path and make it easy for these guys to manipulate him into the roads that they want him to go.
Especially if you're at all analytical at all.
Right.
You just start to see the seams.
And I think they were using bullets. I know we talked a little bit about the squibs earlier, but thinking about the scene where they're getting away in the car, there's something hitting the windows and causing the glass to shatter. You can't plant little squibs in there to go.
Yeah, and the way the bullets were coming through the house when they were trying to escape the house, I didn't buy that either. She's all squibs. It was squibs. I'm like, okay with the squibs. Jeez.
Right.
She's kind of hot, though. She looks like Allie Larder, slightly older sister of Allie Larder.
Yeah. Huh.
I thought she had a little bit of Katherine Heigl going on.
Yeah, a little bit. A little bit. What was it, the panties thing? Anyway.
Didn't have any.
Yeah, you clearly see them on those Polaroids.
Right. Oh, that's too funny.
Yeah.
Brian's like, oh, well, you have panties. I know, because I'm the panties.
I see them in the Polaroids right there.
Yeah, they're right there, baby.
Is this you?
I talked to the Chinese people down on the ground. They said you had panties.
Yeah. he asked her, is this you in these photos a couple times? She never answered the question. Once again, this is where I would lose my top.
Movie also wins the I Still Don't Think Michael Douglas Is All That Great Award, and also, finally, the Digital Daniel Shore Award. Why did I write that down? Oh, because he turned into Max Headroom. There you go.
Oh, can I offer up an award?
Please.
The Batshit Crazy Award for Batshit Crazy Acting in a Batshit Crazy Role goes to Sean Batshit Crazy Penn for... Thanks. You can finish that one for
Spicoli.
Yourself.
Spicoli. There you go. Star Trek Connection sent to us by the Trek Nerd, Mr. Daryl Skills. Elizabeth Dennehy, she played Maria. I think that was his secretary, right? I think so.
She's pretty, yeah.
Next Generation played Commander Shelby in The Best of Both Worlds, Parts 1 and 2.
Oh, yeah. Mm-hmm.
She looked real familiar, and then when he sent me that, I was like, oh, yeah.
That is the same person. That's awesome. What a connection.
Yeah, Shelby was a big part. Soundtrack grade, I give it OST for Odd Sometimes.
Odd Sometimes.
Yeah, it was a little odd. It was okay.
I thought it was effective, but like I said, once again, I thought there was a lot of audio things that were kind of unnerving. It seemed like it was a little bit too loud. The background noises were a little bit too loud. Made me feel very insensitive. I mean, insensitive. Made me feel very sensitive and
that's probably what they meant for us to do, you know?
But it got annoying after a while.
Yeah, it got to be like a din you can hear that nobody else can hear and it irritates
And that's
you.
Basically the reason why I said earlier that visually it looks beautiful if you turn down the audio and you just watch it, because I couldn't take it anymore. I'm like a guy turned down.
Yep, I'm with you. All right, well, let's sum it up in Twitter post. 140 characters or less. Let's start with Randy.
The game. Thank God you jumped, because otherwise I was supposed to throw you off. And if that didn't make sense, that's okay. Nothing else did, right? Right?
Right.
#OMGWTFLOL.
You're right. You're probably the backup plan was to push him off, right? That would have been the way to
that's
do
what,
it.
That's what
Homeboy
said.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Oh, I missed that. Really?
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Oh, I wonder where I was.
Yeah. I was just quoting the film.
I think I went, that's Spike Jones. All right.
Yep. Doctor came in and told him that. Yeah.
Dunaway, what's your how do you surmise it in 140 characters or less?
The game, taking a left and a right and then straight past my destination, straight into the river. I wish I had a magic cab taxi handle to get out of your movie, Mr. Fincher.
Nice.
Wait a minute. You mean the dogs were in on it too?
That's right.
I forgot about
that's
the dogs.
Right.
Yes. Oh, that's a plot hole.
Gotta chase them over to the dumpsters.
I'm getting paid big time for this. All kibbles, no bits. where are we? We did Randy. Ibbot.
Yes. The game. I knew Brian Dunaway would mention The Truman Show, so I carefully manipulated him into saying it so I could use my real Twitter post. The game, bitch.
All right. Not a bad Twitter post right there. Well, here's what I learned while you dug deep into your rabbit hole. If you're going to dumpster dive with a lady with no undies on. Oh, yeah.
Mm. Yes, please.
Worst birthday present ever, Spicoli.
Right.
It was quite a... I guess the whole explanation for that is it was for the man who has everything or could have everything.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, that's
it. But I guess that's actually the whole reason of the film is to actually come up with something that the man who has everything.
Tell you what, he didn't have any good friends or family because they're all a-holes for getting in on this.
Right. Like, can't you think of all sorts of horrible things you could give someone who has everything? Like,
right. Lots of things.
You could give him a broken car. You could give him broken windows. Messed up clothes. Happy birthday.
Hey, I got a clown out of it.
Camera clown.
Come in handy. I can put stuff in there.
Finally, the last thing I learned. Big, huge house. Shitty little TV. And that's what I learned. It was the 90s, whatever. All those computers were huge. Those like giant monitors. Oh, back in the day, man. What do you got? 17-inch VGA. It's pretty sweet. How much you pay for it? $900, you know, like all the ridiculous days. Let's get to some emails. An email from Ryan from Vancouver. Hey, guys. Love all things Frog Pants, especially love Film Sack. One of the things I really get a kick out of is when Scott relates actors to various smells, like Jennifer Aniston's milk breath. So I thought I would do a little bit of that work. Jason Statham, he thinks smells like coffee breath.
Interesting.
Sylvester Stallone, blue cheese.
No.
John C. Reilly, an old sweaty T-shirt that has been left in a gym bag for 2 weeks. Nicholas Cage, dog turds. Oh, now he's just going low.
Yeah, wow. Yeah. That's just
Nicole Kidman, cinnamon. Oh, okay, cinnamon. Sure. She doesn't look like a state.
I don't agree with any of these.
All right, Lawrence Fishburne, dad breath.
Oh, that's because his daughter made a porno. That's funny.
Oh,
that's not funny.
I don't get that.
I guess it isn't.
Julia Roberts smells like hay because she's like a horse, right? That's what he's saying right there. Hope you guys get the same vibe. Love the show. Ryan from Vancouver. All right. If you don't agree that Sylvester Stallone smells like blue cheese, what would you give him?
Rope. I don't know why. He smells like rope. Like, I don't know.
Like a hempy kind of wiry rope.
The first thing that came to mind for me.
Smells like a truck stop.
Okay.
His son died this week. It really stinks.
I know. It does. Well, it's too bad he hardly paid any attention over the last 30 years, but sure. I feel bad, I guess, a little bit for Sylvester Stallone. He's kind of a jerk dad, though, in that case. Anyway, Ibbot, what does Sylvester Stallone smell like?
It smells like pizza. That's the only answer you could possibly... It's the only answer you can give.
How about rope pizza? Can we somehow combine those?
Rope pizza?
Rope pizza.
Pizza had to figure out a way.
So we've got rope baked in the crust.
That's right. And a whole burger. I'm going to say Sylvester Stallone smells like, I'm going to give him a combination. You know, when somebody's been out working real hard and they come in the house, they've been out in the sun and they smell like work.
Working. Wow. Yeah. I've never smelled that before.
But it's that combined with like rye toast.
Interesting.
Rye bread.
Wow. Interesting. Work and toast.
Yeah. Come home from work, eat a piece of toast. There's Sylvester Stallone.
I just Google image searched, get Jason Statham. Yeah. And at the instant I did that, I realized he smells like Coleman mustard.
Coleman specifically, the brand?
Coleman mustard, yeah. Okay. Coleman mustard.
Little bits in it.
There you go, Ryan from Vancouver. You got a more than an earful on our response to your fine email. If you guys want to send emails, you can. It's real easy. Email us at filmsack@gmail.com. Our next movie is Frogs.
That's right.
Frogs.
Frogs.
That's right, Frogs.
Frogs, not Attack of the Frogs.
Mm-hmm.
No, Frogs. It's a 1972 film. And it's crazy.
Aren't you guys excited about Frogs? I remember really seeing this when I was growing up. Man. I remember like when I was like 12 and some afternoon movie on a Saturday or something, this would be on. Oh, man. Right.
Well, you definitely know what you're going to get.
Yeah.
Frogs. You know? I mean, there's no nuance. There's no, you know, it could happen to you. No, Frogs.
We'll see next week how this holds up. But my recollection of Frogs is it's mostly just people in a room who look all surprised that suddenly 500 frogs have come through the house and they get trampled and eaten by the frogs.
Like the basic story is that Ray Milland plays a guy who kills everything, and Sam Elliott comes along and tries to make him stop, and then the critters turn the tide and come to pay him back.
You guys, Sam Elliott.
Mm-hmm. Elliot, right?
I'm so excited, and they don't. And there's not like giant mutant frogs. It's not like that. They're just little frogs that people are just, oh, we're being overrun by frogs. And they get trampled by them. I'm more excited about this than I have been in a long time. So Frogs.
It's got Adam Rourke, Joan Van Ark.
Whoa, people I should know but can't remember. Joan Van Ark.
Joan Van Ark. She played somebody's wife in some sitcom, right?
Was she on Hart versus?
She was on. She was on Dallas. She was Valiant Ewing on Dallas, and then she was on Knott's Landing forever.
Right.
Is she back on Dallas, the new Dallas, with all those other old people?
Good question.
She probably is. They Larry Hagman old.
I heard that was good. By the way,
I don't think so. I know she voices Ruth on Archer. Oh. Archer being the funniest cartoon on television if you like the works of comedians like Daniel Tosh.
Oh, if you don't, I love Archer, so whatever. Mm-hmm.
If you can't stand like really ridiculously masculine, mean spirited comedy, don't watch Archer. But if you can,
very if you funny. Love the voice actor, just go watch Bob's Burgers.
That's interesting because I don't really like Daniel Tosh much, but I like Archer a lot.
Get the feeling though that he's. I'm just referencing him because he's in the news lately. Like it's Arch. I'm just
because
saying
Danny likes to be topical.
Archer is an Archer is an acquired taste, is what I'm saying.
Yeah. Dude, look at Patrick Duffy still kicking it. He looks all right. Good on him. TGIF.
Good job. Yeah,
better than Hagman.
Yeah, I'll say. Geez, Hagman.
Yeah.
Well, I mean, he's what? 100 now?
Yeah.
If we did TV shows, we should watch The Man from Atlantis.
one shoe's 100.
Yeah, one at least. Nice reference both there, Brian. Now, way to bring it back. Way to bring
both
it back.
Both shoes on Hagman, he's 200.
We are going to get out of here. Thank you guys for joining us. Next week is Frogs. After that, who knows? We'll fill you in later. If you'd like to participate in the show in a more meaningful manner, you can join our forums and hang out on our site at filmsack.com. You can email us at filmsack@gmail.com. Please do. We love your feedback. And you can follow us on Twitter at filmsack. Leave us a review on iTunes if you have a moment. That's going to do it for us. For me, for Brian, and for Rand.
That's me. That's me.
We'll see you next time.
Let's go get some Chinese food and stop up the toilet.
They won't leave me alone. I'm a goddamn human pinata. I'm being toyed with by a bunch of depraved children.
Let's go get some Chinese food and stop up the toilet.
About this and other shows, visit frogpants.com. Audio program so good, it's like you're there.